This is an interview with Dr. Savin Landry, February 18, 1977. Dr. Landry, as a graduate student, I'm interested in some of your, what you understood about what was going on in religious education. Did you perceive that Dr. Edge was more interested in religious education and Dr. Dobbins perhaps more interested in church administration? Or is that, does that have any accuracy to it at all?
No, I don't think it was a matter of interest. I think it was a matter of assignments that Dr. Dobbins had assigned the area of religious education pretty largely to Dr. Edge. That Dr. Dobbins continued to teach many subjects that were normally considered part of religious education even after the separation of responsibilities of the two men. I don't think it was a lack of interest on Dr. Dobbins' part. I think it was simply a matter of making necessary arrangements for what became too heavy a teaching load for any one individual.
Now, as a new faculty member with this new school, you were one of the first faculty members, and you came on right at the time that it became a new school. What was your understanding of your relationship to the theology faculty and to the music faculty and to the administration of the seminary as a member of the Faculty of Religious Education?
Well, I think as any new faculty member, there were a lot of adjustments to be made. I never felt any lack of acceptance from any other faculty members, whether theology or religious education. Some of that, I think, may have been due to the fact that I had studied under most of the men in the School of Theology and had done very well in most of the courses. So I think that perhaps earned me a relationship that was simply magnified when I came on the faculty. Therefore, so far as the processes of dealing with faculty matters, we have the usual problems that would relate to a joint faculty arrangement, which we have never had before. But I attribute a lot of the ease with which the new arrangements took hold to some of the proposals, or really the requirements that the trustees had put upon us, and to the strong leadership of the president, seemed determined at that time to see that the School of Religious Education survived and grew.
Now, this is Dr. McCall.
This is Dr. McCall. Mm-hmm. See, whenever any trouble arose, he was very firm in his ruling that there was to be no invasion of our curriculum by the School of Theology, which was hard for the School of Theology to acknowledge. I felt also that he insisted that in joint faculty committees that there be always fair representation from the School of Religious Education. felt at least that he was a very strong bulwark against any kind of attacks that might have crippled us, I think, in the opening years. And I think we felt then that we had a plan in the program. And I believe we needed a strong leadership in those days, perhaps more than we did then. But I always felt that he was very concerned that we should survive and grow.
I've been told that occasionally, because of its former role, the School of Theology faculty members who were used to making all of the decisions that were made would sometimes make decisions unconsciously that affected the whole faculty and then sort of bring them to the joint faculty meeting as decisions that had already been made. Do you recall that happening?
Well, I can't cite specific instances where that happened. I sensed that this was true after 2 or 3 years, but I didn't sense that it was directed specifically at the School of Religious Education. I think the battle was shaping up within the School of Theology, which perhaps related to the School of Religious Education, but which really didn't involve the personnel from the School of Religious Education in it. And I never felt that there was any direct attempt to displace us from voting about things. I think it was natural that School of Theology faculty members would talk to one another and have a pretty good idea of where each other stood before they ever came to faculty meeting, but I don't think it was designed to present a block against the School of Religious Education so much as a block against elements in the faculty with which they felt some degree of separation and maybe even hostility.
Mm-hmm. I understand that Dr. Peterson served on both the faculties of the School of Theology and the School of Religious Education, met with them, and then met in the joint faculty meetings, and was instrumental in keeping decisions from being made in one faculty that really concerned both or all three of the faculties. Do you recall this?
Well, I think his presence was a help in that regard. But in our faculty meetings, I don't remember but one time that Dr. Peterson ever intruded to indicate to us that this was that which we were involved in was a violation of any regulations or working arrangements which we had agreed upon. Mm-hmm. But I think probably he made known to the president pretty much what was going on in all the faculties because of his presence in all the faculty meetings as the secretary of the faculty. So.
Mm-hmm. One reason that I ask all of this is that in looking over the studies that were made, whether to have a separate School of Religious Education, there was a great deal of concern about what had happened at Southwestern over the years with faculty competition and jealousy and status.
Right.
And that there were very significant decisions made that were aimed at keeping those very problems from occurring here.
Right.
And that apparently this was a great help in keeping the conflict down.
Well, you see, Steve, the thing that, so few people, I think, recognize is that I think the major reason that we didn't have more conflict than we did, and we did have some, but we didn't have nearly as much as might have been expected, and we didn't go in the southwestern direction, is because all of us on that new faculty just about were graduates of the School of Theology. Dr. Dobbins, Dr. Edge, Dr. Coker, I,
Polly Hargis was the only one that was not, right?
Polly Hargis was the only one who wasn't. So we understood pretty well the way the School of Theology men thought. We had been studying under them. We had taken our doctoral work through the School of Theology, and we consider these men as men that we had some insight into so far as opinions and feelings were concerned. And I think that's part of what helped to make the situation a little easier than it would have been otherwise. So I don't think it was all of these regulations, and I don't think it was all in the administrative angles of it. There was a sort of a spirit that transcended those things because we got along with these people. We had offices right next to them, in the midst of their offices. And most of them were our friends before we ever came on the faculty of the School of Religious Education.
Well, now you earned a Ph.D. and then became a professor of religious education.
Right.
How did you move into the field of religious education?
Well, you see, under the Ph.D. at the time, Dr. Dobbins and Dr. Edge offered a major in religious education, which was based on the PD, as it was called then.
Mm-hmm.
And under the PhD program, you took a major, religious education, and two minors. Mine happened to be one in theology and one in Christian sociology. And,
what had you planned to do? What was your vocational intent?
I had really two things in mind. One was a pastorate with a strong educational ministry, because I thought that was a great lacking at that time, or into the campus ministry,
mm-hmm.
out of which I'd come originally when I went into service.
I think what I'm driving at here is that you chose to come to Southern Seminary with some strong feelings about religious education. Mm-hmm. Did these develop after you got here?
These developed after you got here.
I see.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Now, the last question I want to ask you is, what influences did you perceive, or do you recall, that were outside of the seminary which affected the Southern Seminary moving in this direction of training men for vocational religious education, What kind of things were going on?
I don't know.
I've been told, for instance, by one of the trustees who was on the committee at that time that there was a strong movement from pastors and churches to have all of their staff members coming from the, being trained at the same school and having the same philosophy, the same theological background, and that because of this desire, Southern Seminary moved in that direction. I've also been told by one of the faculty members that a major reason was that Southwestern was attracting all of the students in religious education, and Southern finally came to the point where they realized that if they were going to train anybody in religious education, they had to have a separate school to do it. Mm-hmm. You would recognize both of those factors?
You know, I recognize them as taught, mm-hmm. but I don't know how real they were.
You weren't really that in touch with that.
I really don't know why the push came to develop a school of religious education. I didn't even know there was contemplated one for this place until my last year here.
Well, I also understood from another faculty member that this was a major emphasis in the presidency of Ellis Fuller to prepare everybody for the church that would be ministers like were in his church and First Baptist Church of Atlanta, and that he saw the seminary as a place to prepare people for churches like the First Baptist Church of Atlanta. They had a music ministry there, and he saw the need of a music school. They had a minister of education there, and he saw the need of training men for educational ministry or assistance to the pastor, really, is what it was at his point.
Listen, I think that could very well have been. But I never heard Dr. Fuller say that.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know as to the truth of it.
I see.
One of the things that developed about that was that there was some plan also, I think, and you know, I'm a little hazy, and I may be taking off on this, but you have to be checked. But it seems to me that I recall somewhere near the beginning of the establishment of the school, a formula for the distribution of cooperative funds which involved the number of schools that an institution had.
I see.
And I don't know how much of an inclination it created at Southern, but and it may have come after the creation of the Harvey School, but I know that for a while, see, we had some funds given just because we had an extra school.
I see.
Not because we had a certain number of students alone. That entered in, but you also got something for the overhead of an additional school, as I recall. Now, when that was, I can't remember exactly, but that was one of the things that I know was mentioned with regard to what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think also another thing that maybe was maybe came as a result of the motivation for a school was that whatever pressure there was for increasing the size of the offerings in religious education, that is the number of them, I think posed a threat to the basic philosophy upon which many school of theology faculty members built their whole professorships. In other words, it represented a practical field. Many different aspects of the practical field. And you could, if you added five professors in religious education, you immediately threatened the balance that existed in the School of Theology for a number of years. So there was some fear that if you had us as had the RE as a department, over in a separate school where only those matters that dealt with the general welfare of the whole seminary and the joint faculty would be considered in a faculty meeting, and where the School of Theology would not have to function with a heavy load of practical field men who tended not to see things in quite the same way that the theology school faculty saw it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was also to remove something of a threat from some of the traditional School of Theology professors.
Well, thank you very much.
Maybe that's all.
Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, you were good. No, as I said to Steve, I don't know how much of this I could document.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was in an environmental situation. See, I went down to Mercer, for example. While I was down there, I was invited to come back up here and talk to Dr. Dobbins about a job here. And as an instructor in religious education, I have an idea that if the School of Religious Education had not eventuated, I wouldn't have been here as a faculty. Because the opposition to adding any more RE professors into the School of Theology was too firm. We never would have done it. We would not have had a children's professor here either.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have gone on, I think, with maybe 3 faculty members at most in religious education. That was all they could be absorbed by the School of Theology. We would have been in a department or a division of the practical fields is what we would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I came back to talk with Dr. Dobbins about a job, I came in as an instructor in the School of Theology. Mm-hmm. And it was a year after that, before School of Religious Education never took form. Now, I'm convinced that the reason they had me come back and take this instructor's job in the School of Theology was because a lot of things were going on looking toward a School of Religious Education, and they wanted me here in case the School of Religious Education eventuated. But they didn't tell me that.
Agenda under the table.
Yeah. So that's the way that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kept very quiet, and it was only after they voted the School of Religious Education that I became a faculty member, you see, in the fall of 1950. But the School of Theology never would have absorbed more than 3 professors. I was going overboard as it was for most of them.
It would have made the department larger than some of the theology departments, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because see, already Dr. Oakes was here
mm-hmm.
with his counseling. And so the practical fields were kept on expanding it to the extent that it's expanded today, you can see what a threat it would be. It would be as large as all the rest of the faculty put together just now.
Mm-hmm.
So the aim was to keep us separate in a School of Religious Education so that we did not affect the course of theological education too much. We could handle the special needs of our RE people.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my interpretation.
Were you aware of any problems of conflict with the WMU Training School. I know there were some, I just wonder if you were aware of them as a new faculty member.
Not openly. All I knew about, I heard about it in meetings where I happened to be present with. An occasional faculty member or other from the WMU Training School. Most of whom were not too pleased with the development because it posed a threat to them. And I could recognize that.
Mm-hmm. In what ways did it threaten them? Did it threaten them with the loss of students primarily?
Well, I think much of what they were teaching at the time were those elements of Christian education which were acceptable for women to perform in those days. And there were not a whole lot of tasks within a church that were open to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the educational field was one of them. So most of what they did was related to the educational task of the church. And here we were going to establish an accredited program of religious education when their program was not accredited.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they saw this as some threat to having students come and enroll here at Southern, even young women, rather than enrolling in the WMU school and coming over to the seminary to take whatever courses might be available.
Okay. Thank you very much.